Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, January 14th, 2026, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belbel. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, your weekday morning wake and bake, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On today's smoke session, let's talk about the continued occupation of Minneapolis, Minnesota by the federal ICE Gestapo and all the fallout from that, including new polls and a leak of ICE officer information. Also, we're going to take a look up here in my home state in Portland, Oregon, where my intern, Calico Castile, who has gone far, far in his career for activism, let me know about what's happening on the Portland City Council and some leaked text messages from a major developer showing the racism they still have to fight against in America's most progressive city. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we got time for three quick hits. Dilbert cartoonist Scott Adams, whose personal politics took a distinctively MAGA turn later in life, has died from prostate cancer at the age of 68. Adams refused to engage typical medically proven therapies to treat cancer, instead opting for the quack science cures offered up by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s MAHA movement. When reached for comment, prostate cancer apologized for not taking out someone more important. And speaking of Scott Adams, the Dilbert cartoonist, passing away, the White House posted a tribute to Scott Adams. And the tribute is in cartoon form. It says, "Rest in peace, Scott Adams," with a blue heart and a U.S. flag emoji from the White House official account. And it's drawn by AI. You can tell it's an obvious AI cartoon. In the obvious AI cartoon, there's J.D. Vance standing there in his blue suit and red tie and drawn skinnier than he is and less eyeshadow. Standing next to him is Donald Trump in his blue suit and red tie. John, well, kind of fat, but they avoided his neck vagina there. And then standing next to the two of them is Dilbert in his black pants and his white dress shirt and his tie curled up like you'd expect from Dilbert, his pocket with two little pens in it, right? And then there's Dilbert standing there with a big old grin. I say again, Dilbert standing there with a big old grin. Dilbert, the cartoon character whose most defining feature is the fact he has no mouth. And as Daniel Kibblesmith on Blue Sky notes, if there's a better obituary for an evil cartoonist than an AI-generated version of his character that fucks up the defining detail of its design, I can't think of it. No notes. Chef's kiss. Lady Love and I are returning to our Tubi TV night watching, and you can follow the hashtag on Blue Sky, Tubi TV night, if you're looking for something free to watch. And we've been watching this show, The 4400, a science fiction show, I think it aired on Fox, had four seasons, about people that are abducted by aliens, and then they are returned, and they seem to have some powers, and we learn about their powers as the show develops, right? So we got back into watching the show, and a couple of things I noticed. First of all, Mahershala Ali is in the show. Obviously, best actor in the show. His character is wonderful, plays a black man who was abducted back in 1922, and then he's thrust forward into the year 2004, where this is set, and how things have changed for him, you know, on a cultural basis. It's very fascinating. Anyway, what I learned, though, is that that's not his name. Mahershala Ali is a nickname. His name's actually longer. It's Mahershalal Hashbaz Ali. So, yeah, his name used to be even longer. Also showing up for a couple of episodes, Mark Valley showed up as a bad guy. Mark Valley was the, I call him the Ted McGinley character from Boston Legal. the good-looking, well-chiseled man character. Anyway, he played a bad guy on the show, so it's nice to see Mark Valley show up. And then another bad guy that showed up in this show, and it drove me nuts while I'm watching it. So, like, Mahershala Hashbaz Ali's wife in the show is pregnant, and then she has a baby, and then that baby is like, I don't know, the second coming of Christ or something. There's something weird going on with the baby, right? So anyway, this Bible thumper character shows up. This guy in a long Western duster and a cowboy hat, and he's got that old grizzled kind of cowboy attitude, and I'm like, God, I know this guy. Who is that actor? I know this act. That's not Chuck Connors, is it? No, it's not Chuck Connors. But it's like Chuck Connors. It's like the Chuck Connors guy, but it's, who is that guy? And his voice. Oh my God, his voice was so familiar. And I'm like, where is that? I know who that is. That's Tucker McElroy, the driver of the Winnebago from the Good Old Boys band in the Blues Brothers movie, a.k.a. the veteran character actor Charles Napier. That's who that is.
Our top story tonight.
Our top story tonight.
At least of all Francis Gofranco is still dead.
Is still dead.
The continued occupation of Minneapolis, Minnesota by federal ICE goons is ratcheting up. We're getting more and more video of protests and assaults. On yesterday's program, I played to you two different sound bites where protesters who'd been beaten and arrested and manhandled by ICE documented how the ICE agents are telling them, "Didn't you learn anything from why we killed that lesbian bitch?" End quote. Obviously referring to Renee Nicole Good. So the ICE goons have gotten the message that the gloves are off, that Donald Trump has their back, that if they do anything wrong, the crime scene will be cleaned up, the evidence will be removed, they'll be moved to a safe house, they'll get a GoFundMe that'll top out in minutes. The gloves are off. They've got free rein now. They know that they can brutalize us without any repercussions, and that it's approved of, that it's wanted by this administration. I saw a video just this morning, a young man at the protest who was shot point blank by some sort of non-lethal round near his face. He's lost his eye. He's blinded in one eye. He's got some shrapnel that's 7 millimeters away from his carotid artery. He's fighting for his life. And these ICE goons out there are talking about us being cannon fodder. Gregory Bovino is out there. The head of ICE, the man with the short man syndrome, is saying that we are cannon fodder. Now, fortunately, maybe not so fortunately, depending on how you look at it, we have an opposition party to stand up against these abuses and call them out. And right now, the discussion is whether or not we're going to fund the Department of Fatherland Security. Because, you know, we have another one of these government shutdown things coming up toward the end of the month. We only funded the government for a few months. So we're going to do this whole thing again with the shutdown circus. With Schumer and Jeffries talking about affordability, because that's what we're really concerned about. And the Democrats out there that are supposed to be rising up and defending the American citizens, I'm afraid, are coming with a little too little juice. Let me give you this quote from Ted Lieu, progressive congressperson, referring to Gregory Bovino's comments.
ICE Commander Greg Bovino last night made a post that essentially called protesters, quote, cannon fodder. He needs to delete that post or he needs to resign.
Oh, So if the goon who is heading up ICE and directing them to violate our rights and working as the American Gestapo, if the head of the American Gestapo deletes his social media post, will let him stay on? He needs to delete it or resign? No, these people need to be sacked. It's not a matter of them not being polite enough. Gosh, if we could just get the unaccountable masked secret police force engaged in ethnic cleansing in the United States to just be a little more polite. To just not call us names online. That's what the real problem is. Somebody else ran into Representative Dan Goldman. Ask him a question on whether or not we should fund DHS.
It's my view that until the Department of Homeland Security reins in this rogue and authoritarian ICE secret police force, that there should be no more funding provided to the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, just get them to behave. If you could just get the unaccountable secret police force directed to engage in ethnic cleansing in the United States of America, if we could just get them to behave a little better, that would be it. We could continue to fund the organization that runs them. No need to talk about abolishing the secret police force. No need to think about the fact that they have gone out of their way with $50,000 bonuses and recruiting in Halo and Call of Duty video games to find the exact kind of mama's basement incel cretins who want to play cosplay Confederate and get their jollies off manhandling black and brown people, particularly beating women if they get the chance. You think these guys should stay? They just need a little better leadership and training. That's the other thing we've been hearing for. Oh, the DHS doesn't give them enough training. They only give them 47 days. I found out who that was, by the way. It was Chris Murphy who was saying that, the senator from Connecticut, who I previously held in great esteem. They just do not get it. You don't reform the SS. You don't rein in the Gestapo. You abolish it and you prosecute everyone involved in it. That's all they want to hear from these Democratic people, is that these people will be prosecuted, that this Department of Fatherland Security will be eliminated. I mean, people act as if this was invented in the Revolutionary War era. I've got T-shirts older than the Department of Fatherland Security. It was created in 2003, following our panic over 9/11 and our Republican bloodlust to go punish someone that had nothing to do with it. I mean, Democrats, even Joe Rogan is coming around now. Joe Rogan on his show the other day was calling them the Gestapo. The dumb meathead guys are figuring out what you can't seem to figure out, that these are the Gestapo and they need to be eliminated, not negotiated with, not reined in. But you get these super PACs. The Third Way is out now. Third Way is that centrist PAC, you know, from the Bill Clinton era that always seems to be wanting to pull Democrats to the right. It's never that Republicans need to move more to the left. The Third Way is always try to be more like Republicans. Be Republican light. And we see how well that worked out for Kamala Harris, didn't we? Just be Republican light. And they're saying, don't say abolish ICE, don't say abolish ICE. Because what has happened here is so many of these Democratic invertebrates felt like they got over their skis when the whole George Floyd thing happened. Yeah, when the whole George Floyd thing, we started saying, you know, defund the police. And then it was used against us in the elections and we lost. But that's not what happened, was it? What year was it when George Floyd happened and all the Democrats were saying we needed to get serious about reforming and changing how policing was done in this country and all the protests that took place afterwards? Who won the presidency that year? And who had a major win that year? Yeah, that's right. The Democrats won when they were listening to the people and the people's calls to abolish and defund the police. So they're afraid. The third wave people, the Democratic consultants, they're afraid if they say abolish ICE now, then uh-oh, come midterms, there might be some sort of terrorist attack, and then everybody's feelings will change about it, and then we won't win. And maybe, I don't know, can't predict the future, but how about believing in something and standing for it for once? Instead of saying, well, we actually think that the ICE is no good, but if we say so, we might not win. No, just say so. Say what you believe. The American people are ready to abolish ICE. Although, I do need to be, let's be critical here for 1 second. Because I gotta address the other side of this. So I see a whole bunch of people touting that poll that came out recently, YouGov poll, that shows for the first time there is more support for abolishing ICE than opposition to abolishing ICE. And the figure was 46% plurality support abolishing ICE, 43% oppose abolishing ICE. But folks, you got to take that number and you got to slice it by race. Because when you look at white people, a majority of white people oppose abolishing ICE. It's 51%. The amount of people who support abolishing ICE is 39%. That's just 1 point greater than the white people who strongly oppose abolishing ICE. So all of the white opposition to ICE is matched by the fierce support of ICE amongst white people. And maybe that's what Democratic leaders are looking at. The fact that this country is still disproportionately empowering white people, thanks to the Electoral College, thanks to the United States Senate, thanks to the gerrymandering and Republican trifecta states, thanks to the voter suppression that they'll undergo. Consultants have to take into account what white people think much stronger than what black and brown people think. Maybe that's where their heads are at. I don't know. But I say once Joe Rogan is on the side of abolishing ICE, calling him the Gestapo, I think we can see which way the wind is blowing. Oh, and one final thing on this. I saw a report that there has been a major data breach from the Department of Fatherland Security. Somebody within has leaked over 4,000 records of these ICE goons, names, addresses, etc. The masks can hide you on the street, fellas. They don't do a damn thing to erase your digital footprint. And that's going to be following you around the rest of your life. When you try to get new jobs, when you try to join clubs, when you try to enroll your kids in schools, you are going to be on a list. And unlike the Epstein list, Trump's not going to be around with his hand-picked attorney general fixers to redact your name in the future.
They don't vote Democrat, they don't drive Cadillacs, and they never use personal vehicles.
So, I guess it was back in 2010, maybe, when I was doing an event at the Pioneer Courthouse Square for Oregon Normal, trying to fight for the legalization of marijuana in this state, when a young, short man approached me and wanted to know what was up and wanted to get involved and wanted to know if there was any intern opportunities with my then podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Intern, I thought. Wouldn't that be great, since I was a one-man show pretty much putting the thing on all by myself? I said, sure, not knowing whether that was true or not. And I invited him in. And that began a friendship that continues to this day. I'm talking about Calico Castile, known as Wiz Calico on my online socials. I don't know if I gave him that nickname or not. Maybe. I think maybe he came in with that one. I'm pretty good at giving nicknames. They tend to stick. Anyway, Calico was my intern and co-hosted on the show for a few years, and he went on to become the president of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, and now he is a spokesperson for APANO AF, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon Action Fund. Again, doing wonderful work here, trying to fight for the minority communities in the state of Oregon. Now, Kaliko himself is Hawaiian, as of Hawaiian descent, and he has educated me greatly on the Hawaiian Kingdom sovereignty and how the United States illegally annexed Hawaii and still illegally occupies Hawaii to this day. Kaliko's got a great Substack on that, and maybe I'll put a link to that up on the show notes. Anyway, I got a message from Kaliko last night to inform me of what's going on with the Portland City Council, and oh boy, is this fun. First of all, the Portland City Council is a 12-person council, and apparently it is basically divided 6-6. Six of the councilors being white moderates, and then the other six are known as the Peacock, or the Progressive Caucus. And of the six of them, four of them are people of color, and two of them are white progressives. So, when I get this note from Kaliko, he lets me know that there is this scandal brewing now, having to do with a real estate broker named Brian Owendoff. Now, I looked into this Owendoff guy. He came into the Portland area around 2010, and as early as 2011, got called out by the Oregonian for posting using a pseudonym of Acta Non Verba, was posting under a pseudonym and, you know, taking the piss out of a bunch of people at the time, the governor, Kitzhaber, saying that he was living in sin for cohabitating, and saying that the mayor at the time, Sam Adams, who's a gay man, said, quote, Sam has no fiscal responsibility. Sam will go down as a one-term mayor and among the weakest leaders the Rose City has ever seen. He will be pumping gas at the Chevron on 19th and Burnside before 2011. I mean, he bitched about Portlandia, the TV show, that Portlandia will, quote, continue perception that Portlanders are lazy with low work ethic and underemployed compared to other parts of the country. No wonder our median income is plummeting and very few out-of-town venture capitalists are making significant investments in Portland. So, you know, he's been a, you know, firebrand for a while. This goes, like, again, all the way back to 2010, about the same time I was meeting Kaliko. So anyway, apparently what had happened, this Owendorf, this major real estate broker who has his hands in all sorts of downtown development issues and is constantly, you know, going back and forth with city councilors and having to get a lot of his work done. Well, apparently, this guy was at a city council meeting, and this was January 7th, just a few days ago, last week. And so he's at a city council meeting, and part of the subject for the city council meeting is addressing the institutional racism that exists within the city government, that it makes it harder for people of minority background to get any traction. And there's some of the typical things we learn, like, you know, how, you know, if a white man is aggressive in trying to get a point made or something, you know, he's working hard and he's fighting for what he believes in. But if a black man does the same thing, he's angry and disruptive, right? And all these things that we have to address in how we work with one another, these underlying biases. This was part of the subject of the meeting that they're discussing, because it had to do with having to elect a new council president, apparently. And the Peacock, you know, got the Progressive Caucus. There's six votes voting for one, and then the other six moderates are voting for the other. So it was a standoff, right? They couldn't decide. They kept having vote after vote after vote. It kept coming down 6-6, 6-6. Okay. All right. So while this meeting is happening, Owendoff is in the room, in the gallery, right? He's got his iPhone, and he's getting into these group chat meetings on his iPhone, and he's holding the phone up high enough that a camera person from the Portland Mercury, the local independent newspaper, that a cameraman from the Portland Mercury can take pictures of the phone. And he's so old and blind, he's got the font blown up super large, so it's easy to read what's on these text messages. And so here's what ensues. I'm reading from the Portland Mercury here. Orndorff opens a group chat with four people. Vicky Payne is the interim executive director of the Future Portland Action Fund and the Future Portland Community Coalition. A former communications staffer from Multnomah County Commissioner Julia Brim Edwards, Payne was fired in 2025 over concerns about her performance and potential conflicts of interest. The firing came roughly 3 months after she faced accusations that she organized a Future Portland press conference about increasing funding to the Portland Police Bureau while she was on government time. Also on the chat is Talia Giardini, a community member involved with Future Portland. So, and we can see, like, they've produced the pictures on the website. I can read the text messages and the pictures from here. I don't even need the captions, but I'll read from the captions. Orndorff says, Tiff is a liar and incompetent. Now, Tiff would be Tiffany Payne, or Tiffany Lynn. I forget her last name. Tiffany is her name anyway. She's Japanese American. Just bringing that up. Tiff is a liar and incompetent. Giardini replies, wait, why did she bring up Aaron? Orndorff. She's trying to show she reaches across the aisle. She is full of shit. So as the meeting goes on, more text messages between Payne, Giardini, and Orndorff, and talking about Tiffany, who is Tiffany Koyama Lane is her name. Tiffy Koyama Lane, who's Japanese. And referring to another another member of the Peacock named Morillo, who is from Paraguay. Okay. So they're talking about Tiffany, the Japanese American, and Morillo, who's Paraguayan. Payne says, quote, and Tiffany is Japanese, the elites of the Asians. Giardini, Candace has been involved, and so has she. They all have. Payne, she mentions her districts and her constituents. I guess she doesn't realize most of them are white. Orndorff, and now Burrito playing the race card. Okay, so they reached out to Payne, the woman who was fired in 2025, right, for organizing things on government time. They reached out to Payne, the one that says Tiffany is Japanese, the elites of Asians. I guess she doesn't realize most of her constituents are white. They reached out to Payne. She told the paper, quote, when discussing race politics, identity politics, I've been told by my Asian friend that there's a tier to Asian, whatever you want to call it, racism, and that Japanese are considered, my friends that are South Asian, consider themselves to be at the bottom of that totem pole. Let's throw in a little Native American racism while we're at it. These people. Okay, so like there's a racism hierarchy amongst Asians. And apparently, Japanese are at the top of the racial elite hierarchy. Okay, well, we all know that's false because in Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, Joel Gray taught me that Koreans are the most superior Asian race. So, good Lord. Okay, let's continue. The movie goes on, or the text messages go on during the meeting, I should say. Movie, sorry. Giardini and Orndorff are still chatting. And now they're chatting about the gentleman named Canal. And I'm looking for his full name here. Counselor Canal. Samir Canal, who's Southeast Asian, I believe. And I think he's gay. I think he's gay because of the reference to this that Coleco makes in his response. So Giardini says he's been the chair of safety and no one has done anything racist, you cunt bitch. Referring to Canal, you cunt bitch, right? So little homophobia there. I'm saving this for our list. I hope someone calls her out. And then Orndorff gives a thumbs up emoji to that. So they reached out to Giardini about this, calling Canal a cunt bitch. Giardini told the Mercury she was upset by accusations of people being racist. Quote, private text messages from private citizens and criticism is totally okay in my mind. Giardini said she was upset by comments that were made by some of the counselors. As a citizen of the community, I'm really upset when people are making claims of racism that aren't true. Yeah, all right. So this goes on. They reached out to Murillo, the Paraguayan, who had the greatest response. She said, quote, in some ways, I'm relieved that this is exposed because it reaffirms what the progressives and the people of color have been saying. This was all tied to the power dynamics we experience inside and outside of City Hall. And by the way, we don't have burritos in Paraguay. At least call me an empanada or something. Oh, that's wonderful. And then now, Giardini goes on to refer to another counselor, a black woman, Afro-Latina woman, black and Latina woman named Avalos. Giardini texts, funny how Canal is supposedly going to break from the peacock, yet they are all loyally voting for him. Those braids are not cheap. And referring to the braided extensions that Avalos was wearing in her hair. Giardini says she simply meant it costs a person a lot of money to get their hair done, and the counselors make a lot of money. Yeah. Owendorf chats, who's going to tell Teacher Tiff just because you can cut your own bangs doesn't mean you should? Other comments from Owendorf include, socialism is communism before guns. Peacocks need to take a Roberts Rule, Econ 101, and Ethics Class stat. And Tiff is a fucking idiot. He also concludes that Tiff wants more power and does not have mental acuity, prior experience, or acumen to be a counselor. Owendorf, Canal is gay. Do no straight men with full head of hair on council? So there you have it. One of the most powerful real estate developers and his cohorts getting all chummy on the chat messages, throwing out model minority racism against Asians, bringing up totem pole amongst Native Americans, calling gay people cunt bitches, and deriding African-American women for wearing braided hair extensions, all during a meeting where they're discussing the effects of inherent and systemic racism on people of color. You couldn't have designed this to be more obvious. And I want to read from the statement that Calico put up online. For too long, Portland City Hall was run by the same handful of people, and it shows. Our communities fought for years to change that. We organized for charter reform. We knocked on doors. We built a movement. And in 2024, we helped elect six counselors to Portland's most diverse city council in history, including Tiffany Koyama Lane, Portland's first Japanese-American city counselor. Payne's text about Counselor Koyama Lane reinforce a harmful narrative that erases the diversity within Asian communities. Her words support a false model minority myth and racial hierarchies and functions to divide communities of color in ways that uphold white supremacy. These texts expose the racism that's always been there, lurking behind closed doors, while these power brokers advise moderate counselors and shape policy. When you've had City Hall to yourself for generations, sharing power with people who actually looks like Portland feels like losing everything. But here's the thing. Portland voted for this change. Our communities built this council, and we're not letting backroom racism tear down what we fought so hard to create, said political policy, advocacy, and civic engagement director Calico Castile. Kudos, Calico, for continuing your activism. You are by far the greatest beneficiary of the Belleville bump in history. You roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey! And that's all the time we have for this morning's smoke session. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Oh, just one more thing, sir. I was thinking...
Okay, so I mentioned on a couple of shows back that Poindexter from Revenge of the Nerds has been charged with child sexual abuse. Yeah, Timothy Busfeld, who I guess everybody else knows from The West Wing, but to me, he'll always be Poindexter from Revenge of the Nerds, has been charged with charges having to do with a set he had been working on for a couple of years, working with a couple of child actors, some twins, and apparently one of the twin boys alleges that he was touched, you know, inappropriately by Busfeld. Busfeld is denying the allegations, but as this story has developed, I've discovered something I did not know. Poindexter married Laura Ingalls Wilder. Yeah. Melissa Gilbert, the actress from Little House on the Prairie who played Laura Ingalls Wilder, is married to Timothy Busfeld. And she has finally released a statement slamming people who play the victim card and blame others. Part of the allegations also say that Gilbert helped groom the children by buying them Christmas gifts to try to foster closeness. I don't want to prejudge this case because Busfeld's coming out and saying that there was nothing untoward going on here, that they were a playful set and, you know, he was friendly toward the kids, but nothing like that should be, you know, criminally charged. We shall see, but I still can't get over the idea that Poindexter is married to Laura Ingalls Wilder. That's crazy. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.
Now you see, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!